Welcome back, Inebriaric. This is Andy, your host, as always. A lot of sorts. I've been getting over a cold. If you listened to our last episode with Tommy Reedy, you know me and him were both struggling through that one. But I'm feeling much better. And today I am joined by George Alley, a musician out of Philly, right?
That's
Am I
right.
remember that correct?
Yes.
I myself, my mother and her whole side of the family was Philly born and raised, so I do get down there on occasion.
Oh, nice.
Great town. Yeah, they were my grandmother used to live in Flower Town, which is just outside of Philly, if
Right.
my memory serves. So you had a new release, a video, Just Leave Me Dreaming. Yeah, I can read my handwriting, which came out on February 23rd, and you have an album coming up, right?
That's right. Yes, in June.
In June. Oh, so is this part of how it just seems like this is the way things go. I mean, I remember when I was a kid, it was like they dropped an album, they'd put out a couple of videos, and then it'd be like a year. It just seems like now you have to always have something coming out. Is that, do you like that better? To me, it seems like it would be a big pain in the ass.
It's definitely a big pain in the ass.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've basically been, this is the last track that I've released that's not on my upcoming album.
Okay.
So I've done three kind of as part of like a creative project with me and my producer. We've looked back at some of my older songs and we sort of reimagined them or remade them in the past couple of years as kind of a creative project before we went into starting to promote this album. And part of the delay with even, sort of figuring out the timing is that the album is going to be on vinyl. And so it's being pressed over at Gotta Groove Records in Cleveland. And so that is all happening. And to kind of like schedule it out, you kind of have to have something coming out every 6 to 8 weeks. And that's, the PR people I've been working with and the groups that I've been working with as well, it's all been about you need to have something every 8 weeks, which is definitely exhausting to do, but
Yeah, I mean, it just doesn't feel like there's good time, like down, it doesn't seem like there's good downtime or like good time to be like, oh, this is when I'm gonna like write my next series of songs or whatever. It just feels like it's this constant like feeding the machine, I just got to kind of keep it rolling, which I get. I mean, doing podcasts, it's like if we take, I think we've gone dark twice. Once when COVID first hit and no one knew what the hell was going on, but one other time I took a month off for personal reasons, and I mean it just like it was starting the almost like from starting over,
right. Especially with podcasts, I've had podcasts in the past. I had a podcast called I'm Going to Kill You, which was a comedy podcast. It used to be in the top 10 comedy podcasts on iTunes back in the late aughts.
Wow.
Yeah, it was one of the first kind of like queer comedy podcasts. And then I did a podcast over the first 2 years of Corona. It was called Queer Rona.
Yeah.
And that was also, yeah, you definitely have to either bank a lot of episodes at once and you're doing them all, which is what we did. We'd do series, but
It's a
so we'd have
smart way
ten.
to do it.
But it's definitely, like you I'm sure you feel the same way that, like if you're constantly having to do the, it's the same with music. If you're constantly having to do the PR and the figuring out how to release these things, or making visualizers or videos or advertising your podcast on various platforms, then it kind of gets you out of the mindset of like create, having the time to sort of incubate these ideas, new ideas you have about where you want the podcast to go or who you want to talk to, et cetera,
Yeah, and even just trying to be proactive and get people on, and even just more from like a personal standpoint, like back when I was a kid, I was a bit of a musician, but I've always been like a visual artist and drew. And now I'm so busy with podcasts and events and this, that, and the other thing that I get to draw once a month. you know, and that's tonight. We have our figure drawing event, and it's not, it's kind of like a labor of love. Like we, you know, we pretty much break even on the event, and but it's one of our longest running, and it's my night every month to like sit down and hang out with some friends and you know, draw from a model and just kind of keep that muscle going. Cause it is, it's like when we stopped because of COVID, like everyone who came back, they're like, oh my God, I'm so rusty. And I'm like, oh, don't look at anything I've drawn today. It's so bad.
Right.
But yeah, it's really tough.
Yeah. I think too, it's like, you know, if it's not something that's a necessary thing, which creativity can kind of be put to the back burner. You know, if you're not scheduling it, whether it's scheduling a drawing meeting once a month or whatever, that you can kind of really easily get out of the habit of it. You know, even like taking seriously, like I like to go to the gym like 1 to 2 hours a day. And if I don't schedule that and take that seriously for me and treat it like it's a business meeting or something else, you know, which no one else is going to understand that or respect that the same way that you do.
Yeah.
You know, you have to kind of like, whether it's drawing or whether it's like the practice of making music or sitting and journaling, like you have to take that seriously, I think, you know, or no one else is going to take it seriously but you, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I've even found that I schedule my quote unquote downtime, like to hang out with friends. They'll like hit me up like 2 weeks in advance. They'll be like, all right, Thursday the 17th, like we're going out for dinner. You're like, all right, cool. Thursday the 7th. And because if it's empty, I'll put something in that spot on the calendar. And then it's just.
Right.
Yeah. Which is probably not healthy. But
yeah,
you
it's
know,
good. Yeah.
Could be worse. So you were very kind and you sent me over a link to your album last night, and I was able to listen to it while I was out kind of running some errands this morning. How would you describe your music? Because I feel the genres are dead, that you can't put anyone into one genre, but I was really trying to figure out kind of like a comparative music, you know, artist. I mean, it's complimentary, but I don't think I've heard anything quite like you. So how would you get someone who wasn't going to listen? Like, how would you kind of be like, oh, I'm like this, or this is what you can expect, or like, how would you go with that?
Well, I think it's hard, you know, it's a hard thing to sort of look outside yourself to say, this is what I might be like, you know, to others, or to like how to categorize. I tried with this album in particular to kind of, because it's my first sort of full length album, to really sort of explore these different sides of my interests, because it doesn't really feel like for me, I listen to one type of music or that I have one kind of influence. I think that there's definitely, you know, like I teach a class on punk, and I teach a class at Temple University about punk each semester. And so I think like the ethos of punk is definitely something that's influenced me, you know.
Yeah, I saw that in the press release. I'm like, I have to ask about what a punk class is, because it's almost like if it's not history of punk, I feel like it's kind of defeating the purpose of punk. Like, is it just kind of the history of punk music, or?
It really goes into the philosophy that kind of informed all of these sort of people we would classify later as punk, you know,
yeah,
whether it's like anarchism or situationism or postmodernism or like the bohemians in France in the 19th century and how they were doing a bunch of, you know, psychotropic drugs and writing poetry and, you know, people that have been in some ways questioning authority, you know, is definitely something that's well before punk, you know, and questioning authority with art. So for me, it's really about that idea of like questioning authority and you know, these people who in some ways are taking on some kind of stigmata in some way to that ostracizes themselves from culture and what that is, you know, what are the motivations of that, and how does that like affect culture in general? So yeah, I think I definitely talk about music for sure, and I talk about the history of some artists that we would say are punk, but I also like want these students to come away with an idea of how the music they listen to now is influenced by the philosophical ideas behind punk, and the influences behind it. So if you're listening to Olivia Rodrigo, you might understand where that comes from, as opposed to thinking that she created it herself, you know?
Yeah. And it's so, and I'm not sure if there's a good solution, but where art of all types is kind of up for kind of personal interpretation. And I mean, we're recording this on Super Tuesday. If anyone has been breathing for the last 10 years, I know the political system in our country is kind of an absolute disaster. And, you know, like I grew up in like the 90s, so I was a huge Rage Against the Machine fan. They very much had that anti-establishment, you know, fight the power, stand up for your rights kind of punk ideology. But it has been kind of adopted by the wrong side now in some instances, to the point where Tom Morello's come out and been like, no, you guys are wrong, stop liking our music.
Right.
You know, how do you prevent your work from getting misinterpreted?
Well, I would say that like the philosophy behind punk really just depends on like who it is that, you know, like if you look at like Rage Against the Machine and then you look at Blondie, both would be considered punk.
Sure.
But their philosophy is completely different, or why their punk is different, you know, with Rage Against the Machine, it's like a political philosophy, and it's about social change, you know, while Blondie is really more about like subverting ideas of like teenage culture of the 60s and, you know, kind of like presenting a new kind of sexuality with Debbie Harry, or, you know, like changing, like saying that you don't need to know how to play an instrument to make music, or, you know, so like the philosophy behind all these bands is so different from each other, even, you know, these things that we qualify as punk, you know, the Ramones and the Sex Pistols are completely different from each other, you know, or, you know, these political, like the Riot Girl movement in the 90s, super, you know, political about feminism and, you know, Bikini Kill and bands like that. But then or like you could say people like, you know, Boy George and Culture Club are punk in a way because they were sort of subverting ideas of gender expectation. And you know, so, and they were part of that whole punk movement. Like it's something that, especially in the UK, we don't really like think about the fact that like Billy Idol was hanging out with Susie Sue, was hanging out with Sid Vicious, was hanging out with Boy George. They were all going to the same clubs.
Right. Is there something about, because I mean, Billy Idol is kind of that perfect example where like he very much was rooted in punk and then became popular. And it's almost like, is success the downfall of being punk and subversive? Like, I mean, Rage Against the Machine is another example. Like when they got at their height, they broke up because they were kind of like, we're part of it now. And
yeah, I think it depends on what is your objective and like what's your sense of authenticity, you know? Mm-hmm. So if you feel like your sense, your objective, and I don't know, you know, like what the exact manifesto of Rage Against the Machine is to speak to it. But, you know, if your objective is to stay on the outside, which is like, you know, like if you think of like a band like Crass in the 1970s, which were like a UK band that never became super popular, became very influential, but were like a co-op band where nobody was, it was really about these kinds of political messages and not about like a star image or anything like that. For them, they have to stay on the outside, you know, in order to maintain their objective. But if your objective is to like subvert popular culture, then becoming popular doesn't necessarily stop you from having the power of whatever your messaging is, you know?
When you're working on your own stuff, do you try to filter all this stuff through? Is it more just you kind of write what you like? Like, how much, like, and because everything you're saying is so true. And I'm just thinking, like, is that like a conscious decision that they're making? Or is it just more like they get to a point like, all right, no, we're done? Or like, how much do you think about the message you're trying to send as you're writing a song?
I feel like my music is very much like a way of, for me to feel seen by myself.
Oh, you know? Interesting.
So I don't necessarily think about, because I wouldn't want to presume that I could control the message of somebody else viewing my music or listening to my music. And so for me, it's really about, these are creative problems I've given myself. How do I make a song like this? You know, how do I make a song about this experience? How do I make a song that has a bit of like a two-tone ska element to it? Or how do I have a song that, you know, is in the, you know, key of F sharp, you know, like whatever it is that I've set my challenge for the day, mm-hmm. you know, or for the week or whatever it is. Or it's really more about like these creative problems that I've given myself and making them like the best that I, so that I want to hear them.
Yeah.
You know? So really it's like, for me, and this is something I remember once, like, I think it was Steve Severin, who's like the bassist in Susie and the Banshees, said that they started making music because they didn't hear what they wanted to hear. And so they had to create it themselves.
That makes a lot. I had my college roommate was like the biggest Susie Sue fan I've ever met in my life.
Yeah.
And he was always trying to like get me into them. And it was just one of those, like, I just don't get it. Like, it is just not my, like, there were a couple where you're like, all right, this song's all right. It was maybe in my old age, I should go back and revisit them. But yeah, just, which would make sense, because I can't really think of anything quite like them.
Yeah, and they're interesting too, because they kind of in some ways spearheaded a bunch of different subcultures. You know, they started off as a punk band mm-hmm. in 1976, you know, 77. And then they kind of like, what they did in the like early 80s is what we would think is goth.
Yeah.
You know? And then they did a lot of like in the mid 80s, you know, they were all like, you know, doing a lot of psychedelic drugs and listening to the Beatles. And then they did this kind of like psychedelic, like late 80s, you know, rock dance influenced stuff, you know. So like, I feel like in some ways they've kind of been interesting that you can kind of categorize them as like being spearheads in like multiple subgenres, you know.
Yeah. And that was a really interesting time. There's a lot of bands around that time period that really changed genres. The one that jumps to mind recently, because I weirdly have known their keyboardist for quite some time now, and I didn't know until he was like, oh yeah, I'm in Ministry. And I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, like way back in the 80s, like before the whole industrial like thing took off. But like,
right,
you know, I remember I found them when they were like in the industrial movement. I went back and found some old albums and I'm like, what the hell is this? This is not, you know, this is not meeting my teenage angsty needs.
Right.
Yeah.
They were more like post-punk kind of ish.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like they opened for, he said he was on tour with them when they opened for the Police. And I was just like, I can't wrap my head around that.
Yeah. Or like Trent Reznor was in like a kind of new wave-ish band before Nine Inch Nails.
Yeah. Know? And it's funny because like at the time, I feel like music was so segmented that you listen to one genre of music, and to be not a poser, you would never, you know, deviate. And I don't feel like that's the way anymore, which I really like. You know, my kids are kind of all over the map listening to stuff, and I'm very much that way. So it's I think it's a much better time to appreciate music because there's less, peer pressure to be like, no, you like rap music and you're only allowed to like rap music.
Absolutely. I think, there's lots of negative things that have happened in the music industry, but one thing that's positive is that because of streaming, because of how we like listen and consume music, I don't think that there's the kind of expectation like we might have had where if you got an album, you were listening to it over and over again, and it was a secret, you would make a mix for somebody else,
Oh
and
God, yeah.
you kind of gate you kept music in some way, and you weren't allowed to like, if you like Nirvana, you didn't like Pearl Jam,
Yeah. And
So.
you definitely didn't like Miley Cyrus, like you couldn't
Exactly.
it was you'd be judged by the people around you for, being like, it's a good song. Like, who cares?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember like when I was working as a barista at this coffee shop called The Last Drop in Philly, which there were a lot of like, there was like the members of Man Man worked there. A bunch of music people were working there at the time. And I played like a Strokes mashup. It was the Strokes and Christina Aguilera, and people were angry.
Really?
Yeah.
That's
Because it's like,
strange.
Christina Aguilera, why are you playing Christina Aguilera at this, hipster cafe,
Yeah. That's funny. I think one of my favorite mashups right now is the Bee Gees and 50 Cent because it just works so well together. And there's this little, like, my favorite dive bar that I hang out at. There's a real sharing mentality to the music there. Like, the music's run off of an iPad. There's a jukebox in the back, but it's been shut off for like years because everyone's like, that's garbage, don't use that. But they'll literally pass around the iPad, and sometimes they're like, all right, today's theme is funk music and you can play whatever you want, but it's gotta be funk. And then other days it's just like they'll pass it around and like you play whatever you want. And you'd be like, hey, check this song out, and there's some people that you're like, all right, you're gonna play what was he always plays, I think it's the Street Dogs, it's like a Dropkick Murphys type band. And so like some people are like, all right, this is definitely Joe that played the song. But it's this real kind of like, one of the bartenders there is big into Ween, and so you get a real weird mix of stuff and it's great. I love it.
You get to have a conversation. I sometimes with my friends, if we're just at one somebody's place, it's just we just play music videos for each other, and you get to see something that you haven't seen before, or you get to commiserate about something that you both like.
Yeah,
So,
that's one of my favorite parts is like finding a new video and sending it off to people and being like, how did I not know this existed? How does this only have 300 views?
yeah, absolutely.
What is your number one current video you share with people and be like, check this out?
Like a video that was recently made.
Or just that you've recently discovered.
Well, I really like this band Provoker. Do you know them?
No, I don't, but I'll check them out.
The lead singer is the son of one of the Deftones.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. And they're kind of a little gothy, a little psychobilly a little bit, I guess, or
Yeah.
but yeah, they're a new band. I'm gonna see them tomorrow, actually. In Philly.
Nice. That's cool. Is there a good music scene in Philly? I have a good buddy down there, but he's actually a pretty big music guy. But so I feel like it must be. But I mean,
It's yeah, I think that there is. I think every city has a, if you can sort of penetrate the scene in some way, you can find places, and for me it's like a lot of my sort of collaborators are in different places, so I am mostly like doing things with people in like on the internet, and and doing things more like collaboratively in that way, as opposed to like going to a specific bar or a specific hangout, But yeah, I think there is, I've been doing some video stuff at this new performance studio called Ground Floor in Philly, and there's quite a few bands that have been starting to come in there. And I just did a 5-song live video that's going to come out with my album,
Oh, nice.
5 of the new songs. So yeah, that's a place I just kind of that just came up that I've already started interacting with other artists that have been playing there, and yeah, so there
Cool.
is for sure.
Where you are collaborating with a lot of people kind of through the internet, is that like, are you planning on touring to support this album? Is that kind of like, because everyone's scattered, does that kind of make it more difficult or impractical?
Yeah, I mean, I personally, everyone I collaborate with is friends of mine. You know,
Yeah.
like my producer used to be my neighbor. My other producer was in a band of mine in high school, and he then went on to produce things for Girl Talk, 30 Seconds to Mars, stuff like that. And now he's mostly doing a lot of also like sound installation and things like that. And he has an NFT gallery. And then yes, then some people upstate and then in New York, because I have a lot of New York friends and a lot of LA friends. So I'll be going out to LA to shoot another music video in May 1st. And then but we are planning on maybe doing a short tour going from like going to Hudson and going to New York City and Asbury Park, Philly, Pittsburgh and Cleveland.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
That's
That'll be late.
why Cleveland?
Well, I'm from Cleveland originally.
Oh, okay. All right. That makes more sense now.
So I have a lot of friends there,
Because
and
I'm like,
Cleveland
Pittsburgh,
also has
that
a cool scene.
does it? Okay. Yeah. It's weird where it's like scenes pop up. There's like the South Shore, Mass, Plymouth area has a great scene, but it's a very specific vibe. It is very jam bandy, which I feel like it's changing a little bit, but I mean, it's just kind of, it is what it is. It's not my preference.
Right.
But we're starting to see some more of this. There's been a few rap acts that have rolled through town and some of that kind of stuff popping up. But it's a supportive group, but they very much kind of fit in one zone and stick to it.
Right. I think that's it. You know, it's interesting too, like some bands, that's where they get their strength is from like a community or they're playing with other bands and they're, you know, whatever the genre is, they want to be a part of that scene. And I think that's like a kind of a band, you know. And for especially as a solo artist, I think maybe you're like more insular. It's more about like your own sort of world and the people around you as opposed to going out and collaborating with, you know, being part of a scene. Or I've just never been, I guess, that kind of artist, you know?
Do you prefer being a solo artist? And I'm going to say this, being a super control freak, and don't mean it insulting. Are you like a control freak and want to control everything? Is that like why you gravitate to working towards yourself? Or
Yes.
yeah,
Yes.
I totally get it because I'd be like, no, that's wrong. I can do that. Like, put it down, leave it.
Right. I mean, I definitely like collaborating with people for sure, you know. And I definitely like Ian Romer, who's the producer of my album. We work together all, you know, 3 or 4 days a week for the past 2 years, you know. And so we really have a collaborative thing going on, or with others. Like it's good to have feedback and it's good to like have somebody to bounce off of. But also, I think I'm very clear about me and what I want to do. And, you know, I feel like if I was in a band situation where it was I had 25% of the say, I don't think I would do so well doing that. Which I
there's
have in the
nothing
past, yeah.
there there's nothing worse than I actually had a very heated debate with a friend the other day about running events, and it was just like I was so frustrated because I'm like, this is the way we do it. I understand you think I should do it a different way, and it's just like you're just not hearing what I'm saying. And it was so like, I get it. I'm stubborn. I know who I am.
Right.
I can deal with that, but it's just like it my biggest fault is not knowing when to just be like, all right, let's just change the subject, you know? Because I'd be like, no, I can convince you. I can make you see my way.
Oh yeah.
You know?
Well, that's a hard, yeah, because then you get into the trying to convince. I think I've gotten to a point where I don't care. You
Yeah,
know,
and I mean
so
that's the thing is like I have a business partner, but predominantly I do the majority of the work, and it's just like most of the time I don't have to like explain, but you know eventually you get those well-meaning friends that are like, oh, what about? And you're like, nah, you know, I don't really think that's best, and you know, then next thing you
right.
know, you're in this not quite argument, but argument where you're like, how did we even get here? Like, why are we arguing about pizza? Like, this has nothing to do with pizza, and we're arguing about pizza for some reason. You know,
Right.
it just goes off the rails.
Yeah, I think it's good to set boundaries. You know, it's something as I've gotten more and more comfortable with my music or what or the process, I share it a lot less until it's done now. And I used to like, oh, I like this person's music taste. I'm going to send this to them or, you know, and I realized I don't want that feedback, you know, not until it's completely done. And even then, I don't really want that like feedback unless it's really going to be something important, constructive or interesting, you know?
I totally
So.
relate to that. Like, I learned that lesson doing some commission work for people where, and my youngest is now starting to do like freelance work. So I always, you know, it's one of my favorite things. They reach out to me for advice and it makes me so happy. But it's like you can show them the thumbnail drawings because that will, you know, keep you from going completely off of what their expectation is. But
Right.
then don't show it to them until it's done.
Yes.
Because they will just art direct you the entire way. And, you know, it's not conducive to a good work environment because then you're just like, they don't, it's like, yes, I know that needs to be done. It's not done at this point, but yeah, it can be really
Yeah.
frustrating.
Well, it puts you into the editing process before you need to be, you know.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you know, you can, especially with them, they work completely digitally and I can't do that. I'm just too old. And so they can, you know, it's easier for them to go back and like change layers and step back their work where I'd have to not quite start from scratch, but more scratch than I want to.
Right.
Yeah. So with your album coming, did you say it was June?
It should be, I'm hoping it'll be, I mean, it'll definitely be before the end of the summer, but I'm aiming for around June, July, August at the latest. We have to see when it's going to be all, you know, I'm sort of scheduling everything around when the physical album is available. So that's what we're kind of waiting on right now. So,
I was just wondering if like you had already started like working on the next thing to keep up with that 6-8 week cycle kind of thing, or are you already writing a new music?
well, yes, I have. I mean, it's two things. One is that, like, I had a lot of backlog because I worked with Ian for about 2 years. So we have right now not only the 12 songs that are on the album and then the 3 songs that came out before it that are, you know, remakes of old songs. I have 8 songs for album 2 already.
Oh,
So
wow.
they're not completely done, you
Right,
know,
yeah.
and
But
I have to
still.
record drums for them, but they're still there. Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, and that's one of those. It's so tough because, like, you work so hard on something and then you're like, yeah, it's done. And then it's almost like you don't get time to enjoy it because you just have to, like, jump into the next thing and get rolling with that.
Oh yeah, and then you also like you're already in another place. Like there's a song on this album too that I listen to every day that I'm so into, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, but I know that that album that song's not going to come out till, you know, a year from now at least. So but you have to kind of keep that excitement and also keep the excitement of, you know, I'm proud of the 12 songs that are on this album and I've been enjoying like thinking about them live. And you know, that was something that we had to kind of figure out for the the live concert we did at Ground Floor, and then thinking about like how do I interpret these visually, you know, has been another kind of fun project for me. So I'm trying to keep it fresh by thinking about the worlds that each one of these songs is in, you know, and because they all feel like little worlds in some way to me. And how do I continue to develop that, whether it's with the visual component or whether I take some of the ideas from that and I take it on to the next song or you know, things like that.
So where do you start when you're trying to interpret it visually? I'm assuming you mean for like visualizers and videos and whatnot, but like, where right. do you even start? Do you kind of like look for a mood to turn into a color palette, or are you like, oh, it's kind of this kind of story, so you're thinking more like a cinematic movie type of thing? Like where do you even kind of start with that process?
Well, I try to, you know, acknowledge what sort of resources do I have at the moment, you know, and make that
fair. That's very fair.
Kind of like, how do I make the best of these things that I have, as opposed to trying to reinvent, you know? So there's a song that's one of the big singles on the album called King in Town. And that song, we just finished the music video. It's all completely done. It just got uploaded. And so I've got the file for it now. But initially, it's got there's a definite story to the song mm-hmm. itself. And it's definitely this song about jealousy and about, you know, somebody else coming into it, who's the new king in town, and you feel like you're being dethroned by them. And I initially had this kind of elaborate idea that would involve like renting a castle and
yeah.
Elizabethan costumes and, you know, things like that. And then I realized like these are not why don't I, what kind of resources do I have in front of me? You know? And so then I realized,
you don't have your own castle?
Surprisingly, surprisingly, castles are hard to come by in Philadelphia.
Yeah. That's strange.
So I kind of had to reimagine the whole thing, you know, and we found a way to really make it a story without it being a literal story, and, you know, tell this kind of like, you know, this, I've got this giant golden microphone that's I'm being pulled around by throughout the video, and being sort of lured by these different characters. And we got this great space. It's a production studio called Power Plant. And I got six dancers, and I had my band there, and I had a roller skater, like a roller derby roller skater, and a bunch of stuff going on. So I realized, well, these are the resources I have. And I had some old dance costumes from when I used to have a dance company, and I gave those to those dancers, as opposed to trying to, and I thought, let me let these things I already have in my closet shine,
yep.
as opposed to trying to do something half-assed, because I wouldn't be able to do it completely, you know?
I really love that, because there's something about limitations that I think makes people more creative. I'm not sure if you ever, there's an artist called Phil Henson. He does a TED talk. If you haven't seen it, it's absolutely amazing. He was obsessed with pointillism and would do these amazing drawings of, you know, little tiny dots that all became like something, to the point where he caused permanent nerve damage in his arm, and he couldn't make a dot anymore. It was all squiggles. And then it became like, well, you know, if I embrace that opposed to the dots, what can I do? And then he, you know, his life changed, and he was making some decent money, and he's like, I went out and bought all these art supplies, and I froze. And then he found kind of like a liberation when he's like, I'm gonna make a piece of art, I think he said for like $5 or something like that. So he limited himself to what he could do, and then it just became like, what other limitations can he make? And he did a whole series called Goodbye Art, I think is what he called it. And it was art that would only exist for a certain amount of time. So he did like a Jimi Hendrix portrait and matches that he lit on fire. He did a portrait of Amy Winehouse and frozen wine, and just all these things that would only exist for a little while and then would disappear. And it's just, it to me, like, his stuff is so unbelievably creative because he was forcing himself to work within limitations. And it's, I think that's when you get really, when you have the, you know, unlimited resources, there's no creativity. It's just like, I want a castle and I would like a horse and I also need a camel, you know.
Right, you're kind of dialing it in a way, because there is no like drive. If you're just being able to order everything on the phone, you know, then and have it shipped to you, then there really is no way for you to, like, you're not consciously making the effort to try to make this make sense or make what you have make some kind of story. And I think those limitations, you know, even with this song that just came out, Just Leave Me Dreaming, I had the limitation of what it was. You know, I had already released this song 10, you know, I guess 10 years ago. And there were people that liked that song, and so I wanted to honor it in some way. But I also knew that I needed, and I had the limitation of what the song was, but I had to also make it interesting to me in you know, 2024. So I think that those kinds of limitations, or saying, you know, oh, I messed up here. How do I make that mistake the feature of this?
Sure.
How do I repeat that mistake? You know,
it's that old, was it? I think it was Prince. If you screw up on stage, you do it twice so they think you did it on purpose.
Totally.
Yeah. George, this was amazing. Where can people go to check out Just Leave Me Dreaming, and where will the album be available when it's released in June, July, or August?
Yeah. So you can go to my website, georgealley.com, where there's news about my album and releases and tour and merch and stuff like that that will be coming out soon. And then also the best way, I think, is just following me on Instagram at George Alley, all one
not,
word.
Not today, though. It's down.
I saw that.
Yeah.
I was like, what's this about? Refresh your feed.
Yeah. I had to log on to Twitter, which I haven't done in like 8 months, just to be like, is it down? Like, what's going on?
Yeah. I'm not on Twitter anymore. I'm sort of on TikTok, but not really, you know.
Literally the only thing I use Twitter for is to figure out when like Facebook and Instagram are down.
Right.
Because that's when they love it. They're like, oh, but you're like, yeah, I'm only here to find out that it's down and it's not me.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. So Instagram.
Oh, no. Yeah. So Instagram and my website are probably the best places to get more news from me.
Awesome.
And then all of my songs are on Spotify, iTunes, all of those things, Apple Music, Pandora, etc.
All the places. Cool.
And this physical album should be out this summer, and it's a translucent root beer vinyl, and it will be available on my website.
Root beer color? Is it going to be like scratch and sniff too? Like those old like 1980s stickers?
Right. Smell-o-vision or whatever.
Yeah. Well, George, thank you for taking the time. This was great. It was, I don't want to say it was short notice, because your PR person emailed me ages ago and it just took me a long time to get through all my emails. So I appreciate this kind of coming together quickly and sending over the album and stuff. It was great.
Yeah, thank you, Andy.
And for our listeners, you know, we'll be back again next Monday. You can always find out who we're going to talk to then. And we'll see you guys next week.
And thanks for checking out the show today, listeners. If you enjoyed the content today, you can go over to patreon.com/inebriart to support the show. You can join over there for just a few dollars a month and help us provide this fun content that you just checked out. You can also email us at inebriart.com with your questions, complaints, and concerns. Or you can find us on all social medias at inebriart or at inebriart6 on Instagram. And also don't forget to check out our other shows, Bar Talk Podcast, Old Colony Cast, Inebriart, and all the other shows on the Inebriart Network, which you can find at inebriart.com. Thanks again for listening.